You're listening to the Weed Smart podcast, where each fortnight we chat about dealing with those pesky weeds. Welcome to the Weed Smart podcast. I'm the Weed Smart communications lead, Jessica Strauss, and today on the podcast, we're looking at good spraying practice with WA farmer Tim Critch. So a bit of a backstory to this one. Back in February and March of last year, Tim had some summer rain and decided to look at the weeds and not the temperature. And so basically, if the weeds weren't moisture stressed, he kept spraying all day, even when it was hot. So we'll get into some of the great results that he got, and Pete Newman, who will join me in a moment, will give some background on that as well. And we'll also be hearing from New Farms, Andre Sabini and Mitch Allen about their new product Terrador. So for those who aren't familiar with Terrador, it's a new Group G herbicide from New Farm, and this product is best partnered with glyphosate as a knockdown spike or mixed with paraquat for double knock applications. But we'll get into all the details of that shortly. My co-host Peter Newman does join me. How are you going, Pete?
Yeah, I'm very well, Jess. How are you?
I'm good. Now, obviously, as most people would be aware, your region had some pretty severe weather because of Cyclone Seroja. So I just wanted to kick off with that and get your point of view from how that was received in the region and what the outcomes of that were.
Yeah, really damaging cyclone, Jess. A long way south. We don't normally see cyclones this far south. And yeah, crossed the coast at Kalbarri and caused a lot of damage. It was predicted to drop to a Category 2 before it crossed the coast and then become a tropical low. But what actually happened is it crossed as a Category 3, so 170 km/h winds in Kalbarri, and then it stayed as a Category 2 for hundreds of kilometres, really, and caused a lot of havoc, a lot of damage, you know, to Kalbarri and Northampton and other towns up there, but also to farmers' sheds and trees and buildings right through a lot of the wheat belt, Jess. So, yeah, really big weather system, lots of damage. But the good side of it, I guess, the silver lining was that some amazing opening rains for a lot of people. So, yeah, double-edged sword, Jess, but pretty sad to see the damage that people are living through. But, yeah, fortunately, in this part of the world, everyone got out of it with their lives, which was good.
Yeah, no, that's a good update. And yeah, very sorry to all of the people who have obviously suffered damage due to that cyclone. But Pete, you did mention that there was that silver lining of good rainfall for some growers. Can you talk to that a little bit more? How much rain are we talking?
Yeah, well, Kalbarri got about 160 mils, which is a lot in a few hours. But typically on the farms, you know, anywhere from 30 to 90 mills, but in our central wheat belt of WA, there's some farmers that have missed out. They didn't get much rainfall, but certainly this northern region got a lot of that cyclone rain. And just before the cyclone, the southwest got some rain from another system, Jess. So a lot of WA has had more than the old inch of rain sort of thing, yeah, apart from a patch in the middle. So yeah, in where I am anyway, a lot of farmers seeding like mad, trying to get as much crop as they can in. It's obviously on the early side in terms of frost for some people in frost-prone areas for cereals, but a lot of canola gone in, of course, and, yeah, and some wheat.
Yeah, okay, great. Thank you for the update, Pete. And in terms of management strategies around weeds, does this weather change what growers might be doing since this is probably a lot more rain than they might normally receive at this time of year?
And I think it's business as usual, Jess. I think it just getting on with seeding. Obviously, they start with just their pre-ems, and then once there's a green germination, they move on to adding a knockdown to that. We're starting to see, you know, some good knockdown opportunities now. Just remains to be seen how much grass and that sort of thing, winter weeds, we get out of the ground on this. The soil is still very warm and a lot of weeds will still be dormant. So, yeah, we're just sort of waiting to see just how good the grass germination has been.
Sure. And Pete, to segue into the topic of spraying, that is something that we'll be covering in the podcast today. We'll be hearing from Mullawa farmer Tim Critch. Now, you have spoken with Tim about his experience from last year, his summer spraying experience. What made you think that this was a good topic to cover? What's different about Tim's story? Can you shed some light on it?
Yeah, Jess, I mean, standard practice here is, you know, it's obviously hot during the day as it is in most of Australia for summer spraying. And so a lot of farmers start spraying at 2 o'clock in the morning and then knock off when that delta T sort of gets above 10 or 12. And that's often at sort of 9 or 10 o'clock in the morning. And I remember Bill Gordon, who's well-known spray application expert in Australia, came to WA, did some workshops a couple of years ago, and we've worked with Bill a bit over the years with WeedSmart, Jess, and I remember him saying that I think maybe we've sometimes overdone the Delta T message a little bit, and sometimes we could push it a bit further when the weeds are fresh. And I was talking to Tim Critch about this very thing last year, and he decided to push the envelope and spray 24/7 all day on hot days, you know, up into the high 30s, which is something you just would not normally do, and had really good results. And just because the weeds were fresh, they're still growing freshly from the good summer rain that they'd had. And so, yeah, a little, and then he's gone and done it again this year, Jess, and it's worked, you know, 2 years in a row. So I think Bill Gordon's right. And we don't want to throw out the Delta T message, but certainly there's a good message to have a good look at the plant. And if that plant's not moisture stressed, then maybe we can push it a bit further.
Yep, it's a good message. All right, let's take a listen to Tim Critch. In this interview, we're going to be catching up with Mullawa farmer Tim Critch. Tim has a really interesting story about his approach to summer spraying. So there's a bit of a backstory here. In February to March 2020, Tim had some summer rain and decided to look at the weeds and not the temperature. So in other words, if the weeds weren't moisture stressed, he kept spraying all day, even when it was hot. And so that's a little bit different to what you might normally find in that situation. So we're going to be hearing from Tim, who will give an overview on why he made this decision and how it went for him. And he did have some really good results from it. So we're going to find out about his approach there. So he does join us now. How are you going, Tim?
Yeah, good. Thank you, Jess. Yep.
Thanks for joining us. Now, before we get into the details of your approach to spraying, could you just tell us first a little bit about your farming system?
Yeah, okay. Well, our farm is up in the northern ag region of Western Australia. We're a cropping farm, and on the farm is my brother and his wife and my wife and I, and my parents are involved, and growing mostly wheat, canola and lupins.
Okay, great. And obviously people across the country would be familiar with the cyclone that came through your area not too long ago, and so I thought I would ask you about how you fared during that. Could you just give us a bit of an overview of that?
We weren't too badly hit. We did lose a couple of parts of roofs off houses and a few sheds. A lot of tree debris and paddocks and things will take a fair bit of time to clean up, but farms to the west of us where the cyclone probably went through got a lot more damage, and I know some farms in the Northampton region got really badly hit. So we were quite fortunate that way. We weren't as bad as others. So, yeah, do think of those guys that lost a lot more than us.
Yeah, sorry to hear about your situation. Obviously, our hearts go out to those people in Northampton, other areas who got so badly affected. But in terms of farming systems, the cyclone is a double-edged sword. Obviously, there's lots of damage, but good rain has come with the cyclone as well. Can you tell us how much rain that you got throughout the cyclone and let us know what your decision process around seeding and that kind of thing has been given the recent weather that you've received?
Yeah, so when the cyclone started to develop, we started seeding probably the earliest we have done in a long time, early in April, and we put in a reasonable amount of canola before the cyclone, hoping that we'd get some rain from it. Over the farm, the rain varied from probably 40 mil to probably up to 80, 90, but some of the rain gauges got blown over, so it was hard to record the exact amounts, but it was an ideal start, really, apart from the damage. And since the cyclone's been through, we've finished on the canola and started seeding wheat into very good moisture. So still a lot of damage, but it's an ideal start for our seeding program.
Yeah, that's at least a bit of a positive. So how much overall summer rain have you got this year, Tim?
So far it would be roughly around 150 mil, I reckon, Jess, over the farm. It does vary a fair bit. Thunderstorms are quite patchy, but around 150 mil, which is absolutely perfect. So, yeah, given us plenty of work over the summer, but certainly a good start to our seeding.
Awesome. So you'd mentioned you've put canola in starting on wheat. How many hectares have you got in now?
We've probably got about 3,000 hectares in now, probably a couple thousand hectares of canola and 1,000 of wheat. The wheat's going into good moisture, and we'll probably carry on seeding wheat for a few more weeks now, and we might start looking at doing some lupins maybe next week sometime if there's some more rain forecast.
Yeah, fingers crossed and good luck with it all. Now we're going to move on to our chat about spraying and your approach to summer spraying initially. So you have taken a different approach with summer weeds in recent years, as we mentioned in the intro there, across your farm. And so can you tell us how you approached spraying conditions in summer over the last couple of seasons?
Yeah, we've probably taken the approach of starting our spraying program a bit earlier than we would have probably done in the past, just so that after the rain, probably we look at maybe a week to 10 days, the weeds are still small, and we probably do start our program fractionally early because it's a larger program to get across with the number of sprayers we have available. We start a bit earlier to try and avoid having too many weeds at the end of our spraying program that have gotten big and taking up moisture and that will be a nuisance come seeding time.
And we mentioned in the intro there that you look at the plant, not the temperature. What do you mean by this?
Yeah, so I mean, a lot of people use Delta T, which is a good indicator, but where we farm in the northern ag region, it can be quite hot and windy and the conditions are not ideal during large parts of the summer. So if we were to look at only Delta T, there'd be a lot of days and nights where we'd get very little done. So we probably don't look at the Delta T purely. We look at maybe what the weeds are doing. And at the start, after a big rainfall event, similar to what we had at the start of this year as well, in February, we looked at the weeds. They were still growing very actively. So while they were active and the days weren't too hot, we were trying to keep spraying all day and all night, a couple of different operators, and just try and keep the machines going. We found the small weeds that are not moisture stressed are a lot easier to kill. Even if the days are a bit warm, we'll continue to spray through the day and try and spray those small weeds before they become bigger and stressed. And they are a lot harder to kill, the bigger stressed weeds. So we try and avoid that, maybe starting a little bit early, which sometimes means the paddocks we spray first. Maybe there will be another germination as we've started on them a little bit early, but it also means that the paddocks that we're doing last into our spraying program haven't got too big a weed that will give us troubles come seeding.
Yeah, no, that's really interesting. And yeah, thanks for sharing that. And so in terms of the weed burdens that you have at your place, what are your main summer weeds?
Probably one of the biggest summer weeds that causes the most trouble is button grass. That grows a lot on the red country and it uses heaps of moisture, grows very vigorously and it takes nitrogen out of the soil. So it can be a big problem. That's probably one of the main ones we target. Caltrop, melons, tarvine, there are a few of the others, and obviously the self-sowing lupins, canola, that also use moisture, but probably saying button grass would probably be the one that gives us the most trouble, I would say.
Yeah, okay, and so it is a hard weed to kill, button grass, especially when it gets big and stressed. So what is your strategy with spraying button grass?
The strategy we would use is spray it as early as possible as you can. It's a lot easier to kill small weeds, even if it means killing two lots of small weeds, even we have to be back there again in another week or two to spray small weeds, because a big button grass is a hard to kill plant and a stressed button grass is very hard to kill also. So a big stressed button grass plant causes a lot of trouble and can be very hard to kill, and sometimes it just about dies of old age before the chemical actually works on it, I think.
Yeah, right. And how did your strategy go over the last couple of years with spraying longer?
Yeah. It worked fine, yep. Yeah, particularly when there's still good moisture in the soil, the weeds are very active. They seem to take up the chemical. Even if the days are warm, the Delta T suggests it's not an ideal time to be spraying. It might be a marginal time. We kept spraying and we've had good results in those paddocks. The worst results we've had is probably when we've started a bit later and we're trying to control bigger weeds that have started to get stressed as the moisture has got away from the plant. The plants have got a lot bigger.
Yeah, and was there any respraying needed at all of any paddocks?
Yeah, we did. Some of the paddocks we sprayed early, probably a week to 10 days after the, I think it was a 40-mil event, start of February. The paddocks we did spray early, we did have to come back on and there was another spray on them, but there were only two lots of small weeds that we got each time. The weeds died fine and there was no trouble come seeding time. There'd be nothing to wrap around the sowing tines or anything like that. So that's how we approach it and we're happy with that.
Okay, that's great, Tim. And if you could just paint a bit of a picture for us, what does a typical summer spraying day look like for you in terms of your start and finish time and that kind of thing?
Well, depending on the conditions. So we'd probably start, when we were spraying all day, every day, I mean, I wasn't doing the whole night. Some of the staff were doing that shift, which was good of them. But they were probably starting at 6 or 7 o'clock at night. They were spraying through till 6 or 7 in the next morning, and another operator would come out, take over, and continue to spray through the day. And we had two machines doing that. So when that's happening and it's going smoothly, there's a lot of hectares covered and we're getting on weeds very quickly.
What about your general herbicide brew and rates? What was that made up of?
Yeah, the probably starting rate for, I guess, glyphosate, particularly where there's button grass, would probably be around 2 litres per hectare of the glyphosate 450, and we'd also add some ester and maybe some Garlon just for any melons or any other weeds that we're trying to control. We have some Roundup Ready canola in our system, which we'd need some ester in there to control that. So that's probably, and then probably starting at 2 litres and then slowly going up from there, I guess most people would be.
Okay, cool. Thanks for sharing that, Tim. And Tim, how critical do you believe it is to spray summer weeds in a timely fashion? What's your perspective?
Yeah, I haven't got the exact numbers on it, but I know from the past we've had sprays as in a couple parts of paddocks that have been forgotten. And at harvest time, it's just a huge difference where we are. It's a reasonably dry farming area, so every bit of moisture is very important to us. Wherever we've seen sprays come harvest time, it's a huge penalty. So everyone here, as soon as that rain comes, their machines are ready and they're going into it straight away. So I guess they're all seeing similar results.
Going forward over the next few weeks, what's some of your plans in terms of weed control?
Being a reasonable start of the season, we'd hopefully be able to get a double knock on some paddocks. So there's one machine at the moment spraying out in front, keeping paddocks that we might not be seeding for 2 to 3 weeks, spraying weeds off the end of germinated. And then we've also got another machine that's spraying in front of the seeders. So, yeah, we've probably got two machines going at the moment, one doing knockdown a couple of weeks out in front of our seeding program, one machine right in front of our seeding program, just putting down the pre-emergence. And then I guess post-emergence, we'll start to think about probably in the next few weeks when the crops start to come up.
Excellent. Well, Tim, good luck with the rest of seeding. How many weeks do you have to go, do you think?
Oh, I think hopefully by the end of May, Jess. So if everything goes smoothly, which so far it's going pretty good, we should be getting done, and that's about where we'd like to have the last of our crops going in. So that'd be ideal.
That would be awesome. Well, good luck with it. And thank you so much for sharing your story. It's a really interesting one and really helpful, I think, to share your different approach there with dealing with the summer weeds. So thank you so much for sharing it.
Yeah, no worries, Jess. Yeah, no, that'd be a fairly common... Well, there would be plenty of our neighbours doing something similar. So I guess people in this region are seeing similar results.
Okay, great. Well, thank you so much.
No, go on. Thanks, Jess. See you.
Thank you so much to Mullawa grower there, Tim Critch, for sharing his story around summer spraying. And Pete, like you alluded to at the start, obviously Delta T is important, but Tim's story is definitely one that shows that there can be a little bit of tweaking of these approaches. What's your final thoughts on this for growers to take away?
Yeah, well, you might have guessed, Jess, that they're a pretty big show. Tim probably doesn't want to talk up exactly how many hectares, but you might guess that if they're seeding in middle of April and they're going to be seeding until the end of May with two seeders, that's a pretty significant program. So they have to get over it quickly. And that's the whole message here. They managed to push that envelope of Delta T and get over a whole program before the weeds got stressed and really hard to kill. And so that is the secret here, that, you know, they're doing a really big program and doing it really quickly and efficiently. But yeah, we don't throw out that Delta T message, but yeah, it just goes to show that when conditions are good and the weeds aren't stressed, yeah, we probably can push the envelope a little bit there.
Yeah, good message, Pete. All right, well, changing to our next topic, we are sticking with herbicides, though. We're going to be hearing about a new Group G product out of Nufarm, and we're going to be hearing from Andre Sabini and Mitch Allen about Terrador. Pete, what is the key takeaways for this new product?
Yeah, I'm probably like a lot of people, Jess. I'm trying to get my head around all of these new Group Gs. There's quite a selection of them, and so I'll leave it to the Nufarm guys to explain the pros and cons of it. But just good to have something else in the armory in that knockdown spike, but also good to have some of these Group Gs with some grass activity as well at the higher rates. And so while it's not a double knock in one tank, it sometimes might be 1.5 knocks in one tank, if you know what I mean, Jess. So
yeah, yeah.
We might get 1.5 knocks with a group G in the mix, and then a single knock to follow. So, in you know, we've always talked about mix and rotate. This is just another example of adding another herbicide to that knockdown to take the pressure off our knockdown herbicides, and also improve the brown out and the control of those hard to kill weeds.
Certainly. All right, well, let's take a listen to Mitch Allen and Andre Sabini from New Farm. In this interview, we're going to be finding out all about the new herbicide from New Farm called Terrador. It's a new Group G, and it's a non-selective spike herbicide that has proved to provide really good control of broadleaf weeds and increased speed of brownout of a range of broadleaf and grass weeds prior to the establishment of crops. And so New Farm Field Development Officer Mitch Allen and Technical Marketing Lead Andre Sabini will join me in a moment to discuss the intended use of this product and the stewardship around it as well. They do join me now. Firstly, how are you both?
Well, thanks, Jess.
Very well, thank you, Jess, and quite excited to be here today.
Excellent. Now, Andre, we're going to kick off with you. I just was wanting to get an overview of Terrador firstly, if you could provide that.
Certainly, Jess. Well, Terrador is in its first season of release, and it's a brand new active into the Australian market. The product will initially be positioned as a spike with any of the non-selective herbicides such as glyphosate or paraquat-based products. Terrador is also the only Group G herbicide to have an optical spot spraying registration, and this allows the use through equipment such as Weedit in fallows. So New Farm have developed a comprehensive technical guide that is available on our website. This has got a great comparison chart on page 3. And that shows the performance of Terrador against 6 other spike products. And trials have consistently shown that Terrador has some of the best activity on weeds such as marshmallow, volunteer legume species, and many of the brassica weeds such as radish and mustard. But we've also had a lot of interest from growers and advisors around its activity of grasses, especially the registration we have for the control of annual ryegrass in a mix with crucial, where even weak levels of glyphosate resistant must be present.
Okay, great. And Andre, you mentioned that Terrador offers control of grasses and broadleaf weeds. How do growers choose an effective rate?
Terrador's got a labelled rate of 15 to 40 grams per hectare, and that does seem to be quite a wide range. So how do you pick it? Well, to be honest, for most autumn knockdown situations of broadleaf weeds, a rate of 15 to 25 grams would be suitable. But if growers are chasing seedling annual ryegrass, 40 grams should be used, and that's our labelled claim. It's also important to consider the rate of the non-selective herbicide. An effective rate of paraquat or glyphosate is extremely important, and especially growers need to understand if they go into a paddock, the weeds are a little bit bigger in size, we should focus on upping that non-selective rate first and leave the spike rate as a second addition. Regardless of the situation, Terrador must always go out with 1% banjo oil to get the best performance.
Okay, great. Thank you for that explanation, Andre. Mitch, we're going to move on to you. I wanted to know what actually led to the development of this product.
Yeah, well, thanks, Jess. So if we think about knockdown herbicides in general, they're a very important tool for broadacre farmers. So growers really want quick, reliable weed control, particularly at sowing time. So early evaluations indicated that when Terrador was tank mixed with glyphosate or paraquat, we generally got quicker and more consistent weed control than when we compared that to other Group G herbicides. And we're also mindful to target short plant backs for key crops. That's a real key feature in that pre-sow knockdown space.
Okay, cool. And Mitch, what plant back intervals do growers need to observe?
Yep, good question. So Terrador has very few plant back restraints. So if we look at winter cereals and winter pulse crops, they can be sown 1 hour after application, regardless of rate. So when we conversely, we look at canola, if we use 15 to 20 grams a hectare, then we have a 1 week plant back, and rates above 20 grams, we need to wait 2 weeks before sowing canola.
Okay, very important to observe that. And moving back to you, Andre, without getting too technical, but it is interesting with so many products that are coming onto the market now, could you tell us how Terrador works?
Certainly, Jess. So Terrador is a contact herbicide, and it works by inhibiting the enzyme called protoporphyrin oxidase. This causes rapid desiccation of the weeds. Now, coverage is very important to get the best performance out of products like this because they are pure contacts. But unlike many of the common spike herbicides, for example, carfentrazone, this particular active, thiophenazine Terrador, is very soluble and very hydrophilic. It's water loving. What this means is that it allows it to move within the leaf cells, and unlike carfentrazone, we often see desiccation only with contact. Terrador gives total desiccation across the whole leaf. But one of the barriers with this chemistry is that it needs to overcome is the penetration through the cuticle. And the cuticle is often that waxy surface on most weed species. And this is where there's a requirement to always apply Terrador with banjo or a good quality methylated seed oil to penetrate that waxy coating.
Yeah, there's always something that that makes weeds so difficult. And Andre, I have heard before that oil can be antagonistic with glyphosate. So is that an issue with Terrador?
Jess, look, this is talked about readily, and it's certainly glyphosate and an oil antagonism can be seen on certain grass weeds. Oil's essential for that Terrador performance, like I've said, but because Terrador has true grass activity on its own, there's no compromised control when mixing with glyphosate. And all our trials have shown an equivalent or better control with this mix on winter grasses compared with the same rate of glyphosate alone.
Okay, great. Thank you for that explanation, Andre. Now, Mitch, what weeds can you target with Terrador?
Yeah, Jess, well, Terrador is quite unique for a Group G spike in that it offers control of both broadleaf weeds and certain key grass weeds as well. So Terrador controls some really important broadleaf weeds like marshmallow, wild radish, sow thistle and volunteer legumes. We also see some additive control on certain grass species like annual ryegrass and barley grass, so those winter growing grass species. And to get the most consistent weed control with Terrador, we need to be actively targeting small, fresh-growing weeds. So generally speaking, for a broadleaf weed, we want them to be six-leaf or smaller. And for grasses, we want to be between one and three-leaf.
Okay, cool. And Mitch, we did touch on the trials that you've done on this product a little bit earlier, but if we could get a little bit more detail on what trials you have done on this product.
Yep, so Nufarm has conducted an extensive trial program with Terrador, and it all began back with trials in 2012, and we've tested Terrador across multiple locations and multiple weeds. So with many Group G options currently available, this can be a very confusing space, and Nufarm has over 20 years field trial experience with more than seven different Group G actives. So our main objective with trialing Terrador was to not only understand where it fit, but was how Terrador was unique and some of its key benefits compared to the early generation Group G herbicides. So this has resulted in a simple product label that allows growers and agronomists to get the best out of Terrador depending on their specific situation. With all the trials being conducted in Australia, our field R&D team and sales team are really well equipped to offer ongoing product support with Terrador.
Thank you for that, Mitch. And Andre, obviously stewardship around chemical products in particular is really important. So what do growers need to consider to preserve this herbicide for the long term?
Yeah, so this certainly is that Group G chemistry, and there's no known resistance in Australia to this group, but growers need to ensure they're rotating and mixing chemistry groups as much as possible. So in the case of these Group G spike herbicides, rather than using them as a standalone, I'd always recommend the use of a robust rate of a glyphosate or a paraquat, and also integrating these three groups of chemistry into a double knock strategy would be the best to get sustainable long-term out of this group of chemistry going forward.
Great advice there, Andre. And thank you so much to both of you, both Mitch and Andre there. We really appreciate you sharing your time today to explain this new product. It can be a bit confusing with lots of new products coming onto the market. So obviously so important to find out how they work and get those stewardship messages around them out there too. So thank you so much.
Thank you, Jess.
Thanks for having us, Jess.
Thank you so much to Mitch Allen and Andre Sabini from New Farm talking about their new Group G Terrador. Now, Pete, we did mention it can be used in double knock applications. Obviously, double knock is a WeedSmart Big Six principle, and there's varied weather conditions across the country at the moment in cropping regions. Can you just talk to that a bit about, you know, what growers should be thinking about in terms of trying to get a double knock in and how that might be regionally different across the country?
Yeah, it's a really good question, Jess, and we might follow up on this one as well. I've been in an email loop with quite a few people around the country talking about does the Group G go with the glyphosate in the double knock or does it go with the paraquat?
Mm.
And it led to quite a discussion. I sort of won't give the answer now because I'm not 100% sure of it. The discussion went around and round in circles, but I think it just goes to show that yeah, we do have these new Group G products. We are getting to know how to use them. And the agronomists through this seeding, I think, will really get a good, and the farmers, of course, get a really good handle on which part of the knockdown do the Group Gs go with best. And at the moment, you know, some areas like WA, we've got some knockdown and there will be some double knock opportunities here. So they might be able to do a standard double knock or 2.5 knocks by adding a Group G. And then similarly in other parts of the country where maybe they'll just get a break and have time for one knockdown, if any, they might be able to add that Group G to sort of just add a bit of punch to that single knock, both on the broadleaf weeds, but also to get a bit of that free sort of control, that extra control of some of our grass weeds and just take a little bit of pressure off our knockdown herbicides.
Yeah, great. Good tips, Pete. And yeah, like you said, we'll follow up once we can give a bit more direct information on that. But yeah, that'll be a good one to follow up on that. So we'll keep you in the loop. But Pete, I think we'll wrap things up there. I just wanted to say thanks again to our guests on the podcast today, Tim Critch at the top and Mitch Allen and Andre Sabini from New Farm talking about Terrador just before. Pete, we do have another regional update podcast coming out next Monday, and that's going to be with research officer Catherine Borgia from the Department of Agriculture and Food Western Australia, and she'll be talking about some weed trials they've been doing with a specific focus on barley grass, so that'll be an interesting one to listen to. And you can make sure that you don't miss out on any of our podcasts by subscribing to the Weed Smart podcast on your app of choice. That way you'll get this main Weed Smart podcast and the regional update. And Pete, we've actually got some new content on the Weed Smart website for listeners to check out as well. We've got a new Ask an Expert. The Ask an Expert is, how can I maximize grass weed control using hybrid canola? And EPAG research agronomist Andrew Ware answers this question, and he says the results of 6 years of trial work across the southern growing region with GRDC investment has demonstrated how important crop nutrition and time of sowing are for maximizing canola vigor and yield. So that's a good one to check out. And we've also got a new case study, the single family from Coonamble in New South Wales are featured, and Tony and Sharon Single, they farm with Tony's parents John and Mary southeast of Coonamble in northern New South Wales, and across their 4,500 hectares of cropping area, the weed numbers are low as a result of the Singles' approach to farming moisture philosophy. So that involves planting whenever there is sufficient subsoil moisture to establish a competitive crop on their heavy clay soil. So make sure you check that one out as well. I'll put the links in the podcast notes as always. Don't forget to follow us on Twitter and Facebook and sign up for our monthly blog. The next Weed Smart Whip Around blog is coming out next week, Pete. So make sure that you're subscribed to that. But thank you so much for joining me, Pete.
Thanks, Jess. Great to be here and good luck for seeding for everybody.
Yes, good luck everyone with seeding. And we look forward to seeing all the discussions on Twitter that will be sure to continue on. So yeah, definitely get involved and feel free to send us a direct message on Twitter as well if you'd like to share anything with us. But we'll see you next time.